market, the S&P, the ASX stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that puts the fun in fundamentals, the fine in financials, and the fool in thoughtful. I'm Andrew Page, and with me is Scott Phillips.
G'day, Andrew. G'day, fools. Apologies for that.
They're always bad.
They are always bad.
We've got to stay consistent.
That's what we're best at.
Today on the podcast, well, we're going to continue with our earnings palooza. We are still in the middle of earnings season. We're going to look at Transurban, car sales, and realestate.com this week. We're also, as much as we try to avoid it, we're going to go a little bit back to Trump land.
Here we go again.
There's a tax package that's been hinted at. What does that mean and why is Wall Street so excited? And Aussies, they're under a bit of financial stress. What can you do to avoid it? But Scott, let's go back to earnings palooza.
Earnings palooza.
So we've got two similar companies and one company that couldn't be more different. Let's break it up a little bit and let's start with car sales.
Yes, car sales, the dominant car classifieds company in the country. Try saying that three times or after four beers. Phil should be happy to know we're doing this in the morning, so my pronunciation is about as good as it's going to be. And car sales, look, it was a really interesting result from the company. Remember car sales, so this is a business that is fundamentally the car sales website, as we know.
Yep.
But it's also a whole lot of other websites, both here in Australia and importantly overseas. And the good news was in Australia. The bad news for a change, and relatively unusually, was overseas.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to car sales, the result was very good. Frankly, the revenue was up 7% on last year, which for an already dominant classifieds company is very, very, very good.
Yeah.
The Australian numbers were fantastic, as I said. Most importantly, the private sales were up. So think about the revenue it makes from dealers.
Mm.
That's actually not car listings. That's largely advertising. The banner ads you see when you go to a site, they make most of their money from that.
Mm-hmm.
But importantly, this time, it's the details of the private sales. So the number of cars we're advertising on the classifieds, that was up really strongly, up in fact 26%. So really, really good results there. Overseas wasn't so good. Brazil in particular, it's going through its own economic challenges at the moment.
I bet.
And car sales really, really struggle there. But look,
there's a very bright future there though in Brazil,
right,
isn't it?
And this is exactly the story, is car sales are taking today's revenues and investing them for tomorrow. That's not in Australia anymore. Quite frankly, the car classifieds business is so mature here. You know, this is 25 years ago, we were all still advertising in the newspaper when we wanted to buy or sell a car.
Wasn't that long ago, really?
The old trading post that used to be printed no longer exists, of course.
That's right.
That was where, you know, that and
tell them they're dreaming.
Your local newspaper was where you did all your car buying and selling.
Yep.
Of course, you went down to the dealership and did other things.
Sure.
These days, the first stop shop for literally everybody is online. And so that's now very, very mature here in Australia. It's out of the way. It's all about overseas growth. Mm-hmm. But the good news, as I said, despite all the things I just said, private listing revenue was up 26% for car sales, and that really demonstrates their dominance.
Well, the market really liked it, so I noticed the share price had a little bit of a run on the back of that.
And that is always, look, frankly, the market doesn't always get these things right, but we're happy to see it up. It's a recommendation for us at Motley Fool Share Advisor. I like the company. It's a high quality business.
And is it still a buy?
It is. Now, speaking of cars, though, let's talk about Transurban.
Transurban.
Well, from buying cars to driving them,
yeah,
and paying a pretty penny to do so.
A very different business.
So. Indeed.
I regard Transurban as one of the higher quality businesses on our market. It's a very boring business, but it is an easy to understand business. And this is the kind of thing, if you were to sort of bet on what company is going to be around in 50 years' time, I would bet my left arm that it's going to be Transurban.
So
those that don't know, these guys own a bunch of toll roads, a whole bunch in Sydney, Melbourne, even some over in the US. And we've been covering this company for a while, and I just it's deja vu every time I write a results update, because the story is the same. It's traffic numbers were up. Anyone who lives in Sydney or Melbourne won't be surprised to hear that. But more importantly, the increase in toll revenue is always greater than the increase in traffic numbers.
So hang on, more cars, but even more money. That means I'm getting stung, doesn't it?
Yeah, so it's not good if you're a commuter.
I pay my fair share of Transurban tolls, I'll have you know. So you're telling me I've put some money back in Transurban shareholders' pockets?
Two words, my friend, pricing power.
You got it.
Don't take the toll road if you don't want to. Battle the traffic elsewhere. Good luck with that.
Traffic or traffic lights and the stopping and starting of the car, and I just want to go down the toll road, but I don't want to have to pay for it.
It's a thing of beauty, right?
Well,
so
if you're a shareholder.
So again, I look in my crystal ball. What does the future hold? Well, I think more and more people living in these centres, more and more cars on the road, and a company with such phenomenal pricing power, they're able to put those tolls up at a pretty decent clip each year. And so you see this again and again and again. So it's done wonderfully. I think it was a very decent result. The the thing to watch with Transurban is it's a phenomenally capital intensive business. It's usually the kind of business I stay away from. It just, you've got to plow a pile of dough into this thing. You know, building it, I don't know if you've ever tried.
I have to, or the company has to.
Well, if you're a shareholder, I guess indirectly you are. So, you know, a toll road ain't cheap. We're talking many billions of dollars and a long time to build.
So you pay the government for the privilege, then you put a whole lot of tar and asphalt and stuff down, you build some gantries, you do all that kind of stuff. You spend a fortune putting this road in place.
But once it's built, there is the maintenance costs are pretty good, and you're just clipping the ticket for every car, truck, and bike that passes through there. You also get these very substantial depreciation non-cash charges as well. So the actual cash flow that flows out of this thing is much greater than what the statutory net profit result. I'm going way into the rabbit hole
but
here.
That is kind of the point though, right? Because if you looked at Transurban's earnings and the PE ratio,
it's crazy.
You'd be like, this thing's making no money. It's stupidly expensive.
A lot of people
look
at it that way, and it's the absolute wrong way to look at it. You need to look here at the what they call proportional cash earnings. And that just shows you what all of the assets they've made relative to the proportion of those assets they've owned, how much cash is that actually delivered. And that's important because that's where the distributions come from, or the dividends. So look, I think it's really wonderful. The thing, of course, to watch is because it costs so much money to build, yes, shareholders tip in some money, but they borrow a hell of a lot of money. So the balance sheet has got a huge amount of debt on there.
Oh, Sagan, you tell me this is this wonderful toll road business, makes a lot of money, and then you're telling me about the, is it billions?
It's definitely, it's like Sydney Airport, right?
And interest have never been lower.
Yeah, yeah. So
they're going to go which way next?
So debt is not necessarily a four-letter word. So when
when
you've got like every Australian in the country has a massive pile of debt against an asset that's not nearly as profitable as a toll road. But the point is that leverage is okay as long as it's conservative. When you've got a business that has such reliable rising cash flows and you can support that very modestly, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
Where you have to really watch this thing, though, is, as you said, we've got interest rates at historic lows. Everyone's now talking about interest rates going up. You know, as interest rates go up, that's going to obviously impact the interest bill. That's going to reduce profit.
So hang on. I seem to recall back in the GFC, more than one property company who'd previously said, we've got a lot of debt, but it's actually helping us. It's helping us leverage our returns.
Yeah, right.
This debt is good debt. It's good for us. Not a four-letter word. It's great.
Yes.
And then the GFC hit, and then the likes of Centro and others, which have been renamed, I think, once or twice since then,
went
straight to the wall, and investors got almost nothing. So
very good point.
That was the same model, wasn't
it? Yeah, very, very good point. Well, the difference was the reliability of earnings from those assets. So those guys there didn't have anywhere near the same kind of reliability as these guys do.
You're saying there's no chance I'm going to be driving down the side roads anytime soon?
Well, look, there's really not, frankly. Okay. And the other point as well is that these guys have mandated toll increases that are linked to inflation. So without going too far down the rabbit hole here, interest rates and inflation tend to be linked. So in any kind of environment where interest rates are likely to be going up substantially, it's a fairly decent bet that they'll be able to increase their tolls reasonably in line with that.
So buy
a bit of a hedge.
Transurban, Andrew.
Look, for me, we as wonderful as this thing was, we thought it got a little bit crazy. So it has been a recommendation for us for a while.
Okay.
We'd had it on hold.
Who's
it was
us,
up
by
around.
The way?
That's me at Motley Fool Dividend Investor.
Excellent.
It's done very well.
Shortest plug.
Yeah, you had to do it, right?
Yep.
And it got up to a 1260 above that or so.
Right.
Now that it's pulled back a little bit,
Looked
at now it's around just under $11.
Okay.
When we moved it back to buy, it was down closer to about 10.50 or so. And we think there's actually some decent value. Look, Scott, you're not going to be running out buying this and then having a Ferrari next week. but this is the classic stock for someone who wants to set and forget, pop it in the bottom drawer and get a very, very reliable income stream. I like it.
So it's a buy.
It's a buy.
Now, I'm going to talk about interest rates again, but I'm not going to talk about property prices. Well, I am slightly. I'm going to talk about the company that makes money from you, me, and everybody else engaging in the great property roundabout monopoly game, call it what you will, that is the Sydney and Australian property market, realestate.com.
What a phenomenal business.
Now, the company is now known as REA Group because businesses like to rename themselves, and they're trying to make sure that we know that it's not just about realestate.com, but newsflash, it's all about realestate.com. REA Group, actually only this morning, this is hot off the presses. This is the Motley Fool cares so much about our listeners, Andrew. We rushed down, we had a look at the press release over our computers in our hotbed of... Well, we had breakfast and looked at it. But the REA numbers came out and revenue was up 16% from core operations. Now, I just finished talking about car sales, right? This is a very mature business. Mm-hmm. The car classifieds business are mature. Revenue's up 7%. That's a good result.
Yep.
And it is.
Yep.
Property in Australia is every bit as mature a market, and revenue was up 16%.
How do they do it?
Well, a couple of ways. The first is that you mean everybody else sold more houses this year than last year.
Mm-hmm.
So we literally just paid more money to list more stuff on the website,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And REA makes money there. And yep. that's a cyclical thing that we'll get to in a second. The second thing is they charge us a lot of money to improve our listings. Now, yep. if you're going to sell a house in Sydney, I think the average house price in Sydney is about $48 million at the moment. You're not going
to sell...
That's
just for one-bedroom studios. Yeah. Yeah.
That's for half a one-bedroom studio. That's the studio bit. The bedroom's extra.
That's right.
You're going to pay more to make sure you get the very best possible listing on the site, right? I'm not going to say, well, I'm selling my, look, let's be serious. The average price in Sydney is actually $1.1 million, believe it or not.
Mm.
If I'm selling my $1.1 million house in Sydney, I'm not going to say, I don't mind if I have a little tiny listing on bottom of page five.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, you know what? If I'm selling my $1.1 million house, I'm probably buying a $2 million house because that's what Sydney siders do.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go and make sure I get the very best possible price. How do I do that? I get lots of photos, premium listings. I get what they call bumps. So it goes up the list. Yep. It gets sent out in feature advertising. I want everybody to see this thing. And I want so many people at the auction that they're throwing money at me and trying to, you know, take my house. Now, that is kind of what happens at auctions
and
in Sydney,
that costs a bit of money, right?
Does.
But relative to what's at stake here, it is so cheap. So when someone says we might have to spend, I don't know, $5,000 on all this stuff, well, I'm trying to sell a $2 million house here. I mean, what's the difference? It's a rounding error.
If I try and charge you $5 for a $4 coffee, you are going to go absolutely bananas. If I say to you, pay me $2,000 instead of $1,000 for advertising on $1 million house, you're not even going to blink. Yeah. You're going to say, absolutely,
whatever.
Can I please throw you more?
Yep. Yep.
And that's behind REA's success.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Europe, it's actually exited its European business, which is interesting. Selling to a private capital business, that's a smart idea. But it also, like car sales, has access to other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, REA bought or merged with iProperty Group, who run real estate websites through Asia. And so REA knows it's in a relatively mature market here in Australia. Frankly, the party that is Australian real estate can't go on forever.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, that growth is going to slow. In fact, it might be negative in some years. In the future, if listings fall or prices fall...
Whoa. Prices don't ever go down in property.
No, but the listing prices may... Well, I think they probably will anyway. The listing prices probably will fall if the heat comes out of the property market.
Mm.
Maybe that $2,000 you're going to spend on the ad, you might say, well, can I do it for 1.5, please?
Mm.
And so the average revenue per ad may well fall slightly. So you've got that...
But it's still a volume thing though, right? So let's say prices fall and they have to pull back their prices.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much about, you know, how much money people have made or lost on selling their house.
Correct.
It's really just it's the transactional volume that's going through. So it should be more robust than you would otherwise expect.
I like REA a lot. I think it's a buy. I don't, though, believe that it will be all beer and Skittles. I do think if things get a little bit tough, a little bit tight in the market, I think people will start to pay a little bit less for advertising just because of that wealth effect. You know, if you think the price is going up 20%, you'll spend everything you can.
Yeah.
If you think you're probably going to sell for roughly what you bought it for 2 years ago, you're probably not going to spend a fortune to get rid of it. There is some kind of psychology there that I think when the heat comes out of the property price market or property prices in the property market, I think you might well see something of a cooling in the amount of money people are prepared to pay for that advertising.
Sure. So not totally immune, but perhaps a little bit more robust than you would at first think.
This will be a cyclical business, but despite that, I think the long-term future is bright and it's a buy for me.
Yeah, it's a really attractive business in a lot of ways.
Motley Fool Money. For more, go to fool.com.au/MMM.
Well, we've got a few. Every week we say, you know, we're sitting here, what are we going to talk about on the podcast? And we talk about Trump. Like, mate, we've done it every bloody week.
And yet.
He comes out and he's. So anyway.
The tweet machine, the one man tweet machine that is Donald Trump has been added.
So forget any formal press announcement. We get it all through Twitter. And he's tweeted overnight that, you know, expect a phenomenal tax announcement.
Phenomenal.
And you know,
so phenomenal tax announcement.
So it lit a fire under the US market. Our market's affected really well. Share prices soared up, and it makes sense, right? It makes sense. So you know, if corporations in the US are paying less tax, they're making more money. If they're making more money, rationally, people should be prepared to pay more for them.
If
now here's the other thing.
That's the biggest little word in the dictionary.
We
by
kind
the way.
Of get to this sort of this philosophy/ideology with economics, which is sort of known best as this trickle-down effect.
Yes.
So walk us through that, if you would, Mr. Phillips.
All right. So I will say very, very early on, we've had a little bit of feedback about our comments about Donald Trump.
I've
been personally accused of being biased. And so I have a very thick skin. I don't mind the accusation. But what I will say is our comment here is about the philosophy and about the reality of the policy, not about the man or the politics. So we have no particular agenda when it comes to the political views here. Is Donald Trump worth electing? Is he not worth electing? Should we vote Democrat, Republican, Liberal, Labor? We don't care on the podcast. What we do care about is the financial impact of what's going on. And so I've been
And
very
plus, we're always right, too. So
we are
always right.
You've
got to factor that.
I did say on our members-only forums, I said I think Donald Trump's policies are dumb, and I will stand by that. Mm-hmm. That's not about Trump. It's not about whether we should have been elected. It's simply a matter of I think the policies economically are dumb. And a case in point is trickle-down economics. Mm. Now, plenty of people remember the go-go years of the early 1980s. Mm-hmm. Ronald Reagan.
Reaganomics.
Bob Hawke, Paul Keating jumped on the bandwagon. John Howard then in 96 had his white picket fence. This was a period of less regulation. And quite frankly, for a little while, it actually did some really good things.
Yeah.
So the deregulation of the world economies, the floating of the dollar, the reduction in tariffs, there were some really, really positive things
really
that came
great
out
things.
Of Reaganomics.
Yes, totally.
The problem was trickle-down economics has been an absolute bust. Mm. There's no serious economist who's not trying to push an ideological barrow who thinks that trickle-down economics works. And the simple proof is, if you look at the average wages of the average US worker relative to the top 1%, I'm not going to get into that 1%, you know, political rubbish. The rich, the very, very rich are getting much, much, much richer at a super fast rate.
Yeah, there's a widening gap.
The rest of the workers in the economy aren't getting better wages. Now, Trump will say that's because of China, it's because of trade, it's because of a whole lot of other stuff. There is an element of truth to that, quite frankly. That is absolutely mitigating against it. But the problem is that trickle-down economics was supposed to fix that problem, and it doesn't work. Mm. So does Trump have some... Trump has some very fair claims when it comes to the economy isn't working for the main street worker. That's absolutely undeniably true.
Yep, true.
The solutions, though, I don't believe are Donald Trump's solutions. And very, very plainly, trickle-down does not work. And the simple reality is this. If I've got $1 million and you cut my taxes by 10%,
yep.
Let's say I've got $2 million at the end of the year,
yep.
Right? The extra $1 million I had, maybe I'll buy a Ferrari, maybe I don't. Maybe I buy a new couch, maybe I don't. But of that extra $1 million I make, I'm going to spend a small proportion of that. So let's say I spend half it. Let's just say I spend half. So we had $500,000 back to the economy. If that $1 million in tax cuts had instead of being delivered to people on the dole, on the pension, on minimum wage, they are going to spend every single dollar of that.
You betcha.
So $1 million of tax cuts delivered to the bottom of the income spectrum,
The
full amount goes back into the economy.
Straight back in.
So you've got double the amount going into the economy. Here's the extra kicker, without getting super, super wonky here. The multiplier effect that economists talk about. Every dollar that goes into the economy tends to create about $6 worth of economic activity. So not only have you got the $1 million going all into the economy, it creates $6 million worth of activity.
Someone spending is another person's income.
The $500,000 the rich person might spend creates $3 million of opportunity. So not only is it not $500,000 of difference, it's a full $3 million worth of difference. Now, again, we can argue about policy, we can argue about wasted money, we can argue about tax cheats and welfare cheats and dole bludgers and God knows what else. The simple reality is this, purely economically, if your goal is to improve economic growth, you've put the money where it's going to be spent and where it's going to, as you said, Andrew, one man's income is another man's expenditure and vice versa. That transition through the economy is much, much, much better targeted for everybody, including capitalists who get the value of the money being spent in the shops. If the tax cuts are targeted or the spending is targeted at the lower end of the income spectrum, not at the higher end.
That's what's bizarre about this too, is it's kind of like climate change in the sense that there are different schools of thought.
Now we're going to the climate change.
So just to further,
stand by, fools.
Just to further polarize our audience here. But it is.
Mum, thanks for keep listening.
I'm just going to state facts here, okay? So I'm not going to get into my personal philosophy. But where it's similar is that you get, if you were to poll every economist in the world, it'd be something like 98% would say no, it doesn't work.
Yeah, trickle down, you mean?
And we've had the experiment.
Yeah.
We've tried it.
Yeah,
we've done it.
This is
and not like 100 years ago, right? This is stuff that we have tried in the relatively recent past, and the results are in. It doesn't work.
Yep.
And so that's what's so bizarre about it. So, but I finish this section up though. The markets obviously liked it.
Yes.
The markets are usually pretty efficient.
And so here's the thing. You asked the question about does it improve returns for shareholders? Yes, in the short term, it absolutely does. If the tax take goes down, then the companies have more money left over. Shareholders get the share of after-tax profits.
Yep.
And so in the short term, that one-off benefit absolutely benefits shareholders. It benefits share prices because you pay a multiple of profits.
Mm-hmm.
If profits are higher, you pay a higher multiple. That means a higher share price. Mm-hmm. So in the short term, that matters.
Mm-hmm.
Over the long term, though, if you said to me, do I want a tax cut? If I owned a company, let's say I owned Phillips Enterprises, do I want a 10% pay cut to Phillips Enterprises today?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I want longer-term higher economic growth in the next 45 years, take that. And yeah. that's the key difference, right?
Yeah, so without a doubt.
Yes, the markets get excited because they're super short term. Mm-hmm. Tax cut today, hey, prices go up, everyone's happy.
Yeah.
That is a far worse outcome, demonstrably proven, as you said, by history, than if the government had said, let's actually give the money to people who will spend it, so it actually improves economic activity and it improves the future profit and ongoing profits of Phillips Enterprises and every other company on the ASX and US markets.
You've also got to wonder what happens to government revenues, right? If they're reducing the company tax take, that's a whole other kettle of fish, which we do not have time to get into.
I was about to get started. I'll get that off my soapbox.
We could go on and on. It's a fascinating thing. We'll continue to watch it.
Motley Fool Money. Financial advice for real people, not trust fund hippies. Sign up for the newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM.
Another thing that comes up every now and again is...
Speaking of economic hardship.
This is something that comes up relatively frequently, especially in recent years. And we saw another report recently that 30% of Australian households are under some sort of financial stress.
Yeah.
Which is interesting when you consider that we have such low unemployment and the rest of it.
Yeah.
So there was this, the National Debt Helpline reckoned that there was 14,000 unanswered calls. They just did not have the resources in January to deal with it. They were saying one in five of the population had trouble paying a bill last year and have zero cash in the bank. So it's a very, very serious kind of issue. Mm. I guess without spending too long on it, like, we just sort of wanted to, for anyone in that position, offer some sort of like practical common sense kind of advice.
Yeah, look, I mean, This is the kind of advice that you get from your doctor when he says, here's what you need to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's the, when you go to the doctor and say, look, doc, I'm a little bit overweight. What can I do? Can you give me any easy plans? He says, no, eat less and exercise more. Mm. And this is the eat less, more solution.
I just want a pillow. Can I?
Exactly. Yeah. What's the easy option?
Yeah.
The easy option is there is no easy option. And the easy option is taking the hard option because that's the one that's going to get you out of trouble.
Yeah.
So, Fools, as you listen to this, this is going to be direct and pretty straight, but you need to hear it. If you're in financial stress right now, it's because you are spending too much money on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis.
Or have in the past, yeah.
And this is the challenge. So the very first thing you can do is cut up the credit card. Just literally stop what you're doing, pause the podcast, cut up the credit card. If you're in financial stress, there's every chance you're carrying too much money on the credit card and you need to change your spending habits. It may very well be, as Andrew said, the past that's got you into trouble, but the reality is you're not going to get yourself out of that trouble until you make a financial change. And that change needs to be one of behavior, and it needs to be one of cutting up the credit cards.
Oh, that's not the easy answer I was after.
The second thing you need to do is...
Just on that too, I would say that the trouble with... You mentioned credit card debt there. We've talked long and we'll continue to rant on and on and on about the wonders of compounding and how phenomenal it is. But of course, with you know, cards where you're paying 20% interest or God knows whatever it is, you've got that compounding working against you. So you get to a situation where even if you stop spending and diligently try to pay that down, because the interest is so high on that, you just never get out of it. It compounds away from you and it's a disaster. So one of the first things you should consider doing is consolidating all of that debt into somewhere where you can go onto some kind of plan. And even if you're doing this manually, or there's a number of institutions that will help you this, they'll give you a lower interest rate and they'll put you through a structured plan and you'll have a path, not an easy path, but a path out of your problems.
And you have to cut up the card. Don't put yourself onto a plan and then go and start spending again. Squaring off credit and then getting yourself back out of trouble. Second thing is if you're in a situation where you've got too much other debt. So if you've got a house that's killing you, the mortgage is killing you. If your car repayments are killing you, you need to make a change. You're going to need to sell the house. You're going to need to move out. You're going to need to get a renter in. You're going to need to sell the car. But I don't want to, because that is not an answer, Fools. If you're under financial stress right now, this doesn't get better. And in fact, rates are probably going to go up, not down. So this is probably going to get worse. If you're under stress now, you have an unsustainable lifestyle and you need to make a change. If this is you, if this is someone you know, if it's a friend, a family member, tell them they need to make a change. Send them a copy of the podcast. They need to stop spending. They need to sell down the house or the car, whatever else is needed. As painful as it might be, it is going to, I promise you, be better for them in the long term if they do it now.
Yeah, it makes such a huge difference, doesn't it?
Boring, huh?
It's boring. I kind of think I wish we could give something a little bit better there. I think one of the dangers I see people try to, particularly in our area, people try and trade their way out of it. It's just like, you know, the solution is seen as, well, I'll take some riskier bets. I'll do this, I'll do that. I'll get a pile of money and then I'll pay it down.
Yep.
And that just rarely works out.
Yep.
Mate, we better wrap this up. We've done it again. We've gone well over time. Remember, you can subscribe to the Triple M Motley Fool Money podcast through iTunes or through whatever Android podcast app you are using.
How many stars should they give us, Andrew?
I gave it 5.
I think we're worth 5 stars.
Look, if there was possible to give 6, then do that, but we'll take 5.
We'll take 5. It doesn't go all the way to 11, unfortunately, this
podcast.
It does not. If we could, it would.
It would.
But 5 stars will do. And don't forget, fools, go to fool.com.au/Triple M, and there you can subscribe to our mailing list where you can get free advice and commentary from us and our boss, Bruce Jackson, and find a little bit more about the Motley Fool. Give us a go. It's free. We think it's worth it. No credit card required.
Nicely done. Thank you, sir. Until next week, fool on.
Fool on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/Triple M. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services License 400691.